The Good Earth, Disc 2.
Chapter 3. When the hour for birth drew near, he said to the woman, "We must have someone to help at the time, some woman." But she shook her head. She was clearing away the bowls after the evening food. The old man had gone to his bed, and the two of them were alone in the night, with only the light that fell upon them from the flickering flame of a small tin lamp filled with bean oil, in which a twist of cotton floated for a wick. "No woman?" he asked in consternation. He was beginning now to be accustomed to these conversations with her, in which her part was little more than a movement of head or hand, or at most an occasional word dropped unwillingly from her wide mouth. He had even come to feel no lack in such conversing. "But it will be odd with only two men in the house," he continued. "My mother had a woman from the village. I know nothing of these affairs. Is there none in the great house, no old slave with whom you were friends who could come?" It was the first time he had mentioned the house from which she came. She turned on him as he had never seen her. Her narrow eyes widened, her face stirred with dull anger. "None in that house," she cried out at him. He dropped his pipe, which he was filling, and stared at her. But her face was suddenly as usual, and she was collecting the chopsticks as though she had not spoken. "Well, here is a thing," he said in astonishment. But she said nothing. Then he continued in argument. "We two men, we have no ability in childbirth. For my father, it's not fitting to enter your room. For myself, I have never even seen a cow give birth. My clumsy hands might mar the child. Someone from the great house now, where the slaves are always giving birth." She had placed the chopsticks carefully down in an orderly heap upon the table, and she looked at him. And after a moment's looking, she said, "When I return to that house, it will be with my son in my arms. I shall have a red coat on him, and red-flowered trousers, and on his head a hat with a small gilded Buddha sewn on the front, and on his feet tiger-faced shoes. And I will wear new shoes and a new coat of black sateen, and I will go into the kitchen where I spent my days, and I will go into the great hall where the old one sits with her opium, and I will show myself and my son to all of them." He had never heard so many words from her before. They came forth steadily and without break, albeit slowly, and he realized that she had planned this whole thing out for herself. When she had been working in the fields beside him, she had been planning all this out. How astonishing she was! He would have said that she had scarcely thought of the child, so stilly had she gone about her work day in and day out. And instead, she saw this child, born and fully clothed, and herself as his mother, in a new coat. He was for once without words himself, and he pressed the tobacco diligently into a ball between his thumb and forefinger, and picking up his pipe, he fitted the tobacco into the bowl. "I suppose you will need some money," he said at last with apparent gruffness.
"If you will give me 3 silver pieces, she said fearfully. "It is a great deal, but I have counted carefully, and I will waste no penny of it. I shall make the cloth dealer give me the last inch to the foot."
Wang Lung fumbled in his girdle. The day before he had sold a load and a half of reeds from the pond in the western field to the town market, and he had in his girdle a little more than she wished. He put the 3 silver dollars upon the table. Then, after a little hesitation, he added a 4th piece, which he had long kept by him on the chance of his wanting to gamble a little some morning at the tea-house. But he never did more than linger about the tables and look at the dice as they clattered upon the table, fearful lest he lose if he played. He usually ended by spending his spare hours in the town at the storyteller's booth, where one may listen to an old tale and pay no more than a penny into his bowl when it was passed about. "You had better take the other piece," he said, lighting his pipe between the words, blowing quickly at the paper spill to set it aflame. "You may as well make his coat of a small remnant of silk. After all, he is the first." She didn't at once take the money, but she stood looking at it, her face motionless. Then she said in a half-whisper, "It is the first time I have had silver money in my hand." Suddenly she took it and clenched it in her hand and hurried into the bedroom. Wang Lung sat smoking, thinking of the silver as it had lain upon the table. It had come out of the earth, this silver, out of his earth that he ploughed and turned and spent himself upon. He took his life from this earth. Drop by drop by his sweat he wrung food from it, and from the food, silver. Each time before this that he had taken the silver out to give to anyone, it had been like taking a piece of his life and giving it to someone carelessly. But now, for the first time, such giving wasn't pain. He saw not the silver in the alien hand of a merchant in the town. He saw the silver transmuted into something worth even more than itself. Clothes upon the body of his son. And this strange woman of his, who worked about, saying nothing, seeming to see nothing, she had first seen the child thus clothed. She would have no one with her when the hour came. It came one night early, when the sun was scarcely set. She was working beside him in the harvest field. The wheat had borne and been cut, and the field flooded, and the young rice set, and now the rice bore harvest, and the ears were ripe and full after the summer rains and the warm ripening sun of early autumn. Together they cut the sheaves all day, bending and cutting with short-handled scythes. She had stooped stiffly because of the burden she bore, and she moved more slowly than he, so that they cut unevenly, his row ahead and hers behind. She began to cut more and more slowly as noon wore on to afternoon and evening, and he turned to look at her with impatience. She stopped and stood up then. Her scythe dropped. On her face was a new sweat, the sweat of a new agony. "It is come," she said. "I'll go into the house. Do not come into the room until I call. Only bring me a newly peeled reed and slit it that I may cut the child's life from mine." She went across the fields toward the house as though there were nothing to come. And after he had watched her, he went to the edge of the pond in the outer field and chose a slim green reed and peeled it carefully and slit it on the edge of his scythe. The quick autumn darkness was falling then, and he shouldered his scythe and went home. When he reached the house, he found his supper hot on the table and the old man eating. She had stopped in her labor to prepare them food. He said to himself that she was a woman such as is not commonly found. Then he went to the door of their room and he called out, "Here is the reed." He waited, expecting that she would call out to him to bring it in to her, but she didn't. She came to the door, and through the crack her hand reached out and took the reed. She said no word, but he heard her panting as an animal pants which has run for a long way. The old man looked up from his bowl to say, "Eat, or all will be cold." And then he said, "Don't trouble yourself yet, it will be a long time. I remember well when the first was born to me, it was dawn before it was over. Ah, me, to think that out of all the children I begot and your mother bore, one after the other, a score or so, I forget, only you have lived. You see why a woman must bear and bear." And then he said again, as though he had just thought of it newly, "By this time tomorrow I may be grandfather to a man-child." He began to laugh suddenly, and he stopped his eating and sat chuckling for a long time in the dusk of the room. But Wang Lung stood listening at the door to those heavy animal pants. A smell of hot blood came through the crack, a sickening smell that frightened him. The panting of the woman within became quick and loud, like whispered screams, but she made no sound aloud. When he could bear no more and was about to break into the room, a thin, fierce cry came out, and he forgot everything. "Is it a man?" he cried importunately, forgetting the woman. The thin cry burst out again, wiry, insistent. "Is it a man?" he cried again. "Tell me at least this. Is it a man?" And the voice of the woman answered as faintly as an echo, "A man." He went and sat down at the table then. How quick it had all been! The food was long cold, and the old man was asleep on his bench. But how quick it had all been! He shook the old man's shoulder. "It is a man-child," he called triumphantly. "You are grandfather, and I am father." The old man woke suddenly and began to laugh as he had been laughing when he fell asleep. "Yes, yes, of course," he cackled. "A grandfather, a grandfather." And he rose and went to his bed, still laughing. Wang Lung took up the bowl of cold rice and began to eat. He was very hungry all at once, and he couldn't get the food into his mouth quickly enough. In the room, he could hear the woman dragging herself about, and the cry of the child was incessant and piercing. "I suppose we shall have no more peace in this house now," he said to himself, proudly. When he had eaten all that he wished, he went to the door again, and she called to him to come in, and he went in. The odor of spilt blood still hung hot upon the air, but there was no trace of it, except in the wooden tub. But into this she had poured water and had pushed it under the bed so that he could hardly see it. The red candle was lit, and she was lying neatly covered upon the bed. Beside her, wrapped in a pair of his old trousers, as the custom was in this part, lay his son. He went up, and for the moment there were no words in his mouth. His heart crowded up into his breast, and he leaned over the child to look at it. It had a round, wrinkled face that looked very dark, and upon its head the hair was long and damp and black. It had ceased crying and lay with its eyes tightly shut. He looked at his wife, and she looked back at him. Her hair was still wet with her agony, and her narrow eyes were sunken. Beyond this, she was as she always was. But to him she was touching, lying there. His heart rushed out to these two, and he said, not knowing what else there was that could be said, "Tomorrow I will go into the city and buy a pound of red sugar and stir it into boiling water for you to drink." And then looking at the child again, this burst forth from him suddenly as though he had just thought of it. "We shall have to buy a good basket full of eggs and dye them all red for the village. Thus will everyone know I have a son."